Hey, I'm Linda Ross. Thanks for joining us today. This is the Garden Clinic Digs Deeper podcast. It's great to have your company with me today, where we go right around Australia talking to those who love gardening, who love gardens, and who love connecting with gardening people.
The best garden in the street.
G'day, Graham Ross here. Now, you all know I love my gardening, and we all know that Sea Sol is simply fantastic for keeping your garden healthy and looking great. But did you know that Sea Sol reduces transplant shock and dramatically increases the plant's survival rate when they're newly planted? Now, look, it's like an insurance policy for your plants. So when you're planting out your seedlings and new plants in your garden, don't just water them in, Sea Sol your plants.
Don't forget the Sea Sol.
I'm thrilled to have my next guest as one of the authors of a new book called The Village. Matt and Lentil Purbrick are the couple behind one of my favourite books of last year, Grown and Gathered, that came from their small holdings. They're known for promoting seasonal, regional and whole food ingredients alongside sort of naturalistic growing principles, I suppose. Matt and Lentil began selling all their produce to some of Melbourne's most snazzy little restaurants, encouraging chefs to adopt principles of sourcing local products, real products, sustainable farming and so forth. And they had this wonderful little van called the Produce Van, where they'd pulled up their van each week in the streets of Melbourne and sold all their fantastic veggies and chatted to people in the city about sustainability and all sorts of stuff. And then they had this flower exchange where they grew flowers and then they traded them without any exchanging money for a year. Isn't that gorgeous? Armfuls of dahlias and zinnias and the most wonderful phlox and delphiniums, just extraordinarily romantic. They have a really pragmatic approach to food, and it's inspired me and it's inspired many people around the world. They've just written a new book called The Village. They're currently living in north central region of Victoria, where they spend a lot of time growing natural food and communicating with their local village, their community. Lentil loves the writing and the photography, which is just beautiful. And Matt, he really loves the growing and the food and the design. It's a real team effort, and it's a real pleasure to have Matt Purbrick on the phone with me today. G'day, Matt. It's a really great pleasure to welcome you to the show, Matt. You've just jumped out of a tree to join us. Good morning.
Thank you very much. Yeah, good to be here. Nice to have a little break from pruning.
What are you pruning at the moment?
Well, I'm trying to keep up with the peach trees. They're all starting to blossom, and I've been a bit lazy over winter. So,
and what do you do?
Finally, doing my part of the job.
Ah, great! It's a big job. What do you do for peach leaf curl?
Make sure the health is very good. More than anything, we've only been in the place we are now in our little village for the last season. So last season was all about watching, and this season I'm trying to, I guess, get ahead of things a little bit more. So. Trying to build up those trees that suffered a bit last year and get them in better health so they don't suffer from it this year.
Do you know what varieties of peaches you've got?
No, I'm honestly not over it yet, because last year we had a beautiful big yellow peach, which was great.
Yep.
But all the others got too much leaf curl. It's sort of fruit set. So now we're just working out. Everything's looking good this year. So I think we'll be finding out by the end of this season exactly what we're sitting on.
The farm really is your place to nourish not only your souls, but to feed Lentil and yourself. Tell me a little bit what the farm means to you and that little place that you call home.
Well, like you say, for us it's our little nourishing place. I mean, for me, spiritually, it's a nourishing place. It's the place I like to just spend and be nourished back from, I guess, the earth and that energy, which is lovely. But as well, it's obviously a great food reward. So for us, everything that we put in, we get back in spades. So we're always, willing to put energy into that. We used to have a 6-acre farm. That's where we wrote the first book. And now we've just got an acre and a half in the middle of the village, which is treating us. It's nicer because we're nourished by a community now as well. We're not isolated. But we have here fruit trees and all the vegetables we need and all our chickens. And we've even got a few sheep on the block at the moment to keep the grass down. The rest are down the road at our friend's farm. So we have everything we need here, really. It's lovely. It's our little paradise.
So that first book, Grown and Gathered, is such a wonderful communication between you and Lentil to the rest of the world, mainly via your Instagram account, firstly, it was just such a wonderful little picture into your world, and hundreds of thousands of people right around the world were inspired by it. That led to the first book, Grown and Gathered, which again was just such a wonderful meaty kind of guide for people to get more into maybe fermenting and growing a veggie patch from scratch, and right through to bottling preserves and making the most of the harvest. And it was such a lovely, easy read, and I'm sure so many people like myself got into things that they might not have tried before, particularly the sourdough. Lots of failures until the success, but it was really, it gives you a little bit more confidence as a person to get into and try these things. And I think it was such a successful book originally. I love the whole flower trade idea, you know, from that first book, and you know, coming out of that farm, that 6-acre farm. Then what happened? Something happened. Did you travel? What was the inspiration and the catalyst for the next book?
Well, it had been, we had an event a couple of nights ago, and the same question was raised, why the big shift? But for us, it really has felt like a journey on the same path. For many years, we'd been sort of simmering away happily on the farm, but we were in the middle of a 3,000-acre property, 10 minutes outside of town, a town that wasn't necessarily full of the kind of people that met our philosophy of growing food and wanting to really be engaged with that kind of natural life. So we'd been looking for a shift and looking to be more involved with our community, which weren't around us, basically. They were in Melbourne or they were over in the area that we live now. So we'd been looking for some time to move. And at the same time, we'd gone into education massively, you know, writing the books, and before that, running open farms and running workshops on the farm and in Melbourne. And we just kind of run out of time to be able to continue the commercial scale of production that we had been doing, because that was how it all began. And so we had already started scaling down the farm anyway. So it was a really natural step for us to then get a smaller block here, sort of just live a bit more in community, which has just been the most rewarding shift that we could have imagined. It's been fantastic.
I think we all struggle, even those of us in huge, big, multi-million people cities. We struggle with finding friendships that are long and lasting and perhaps rewarding. We struggle with creating a community of like-minded people around us. We're so busy. Some of us get home late and leave really early. It's hard enough to connect and lean into our own families, let alone creating a family or a village of like-minded people around us in big cities. But that really is the core of this new book called The Village, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And it's, for us, we've always, you know, we have wonderful friends and they're literally spread out across Australia now. We were all quite centralised once, but now everyone's spread out to their various parts. It seems to be a thing in Australia. We just desperately go where we go, or we're all across the world. And I feel we sort of realised that we at least had a concentration of family that we really resonated with, cousins of mine over this way. We're over near Castlemaine now. And a bunch of mates out this way as well, in Castlemaine itself and in the little villages around it. And we live in one of those now. So it was, for us, we just realised there was at least a central place where our people were. And we were missing out if we didn't sort of place ourselves in the centre of that, because it is such an important thing for us. And we sort of had created that community on the larger farm over at Tabilk. And we'd surrounded ourselves with interns and with other friends who moved onto the property as well and were doing their things there. But it wasn't necessarily real. We created all of that. It wasn't the existing community that we had been a part of. And in that way, it wasn't as sustainable because people came and went, and there was no solid base of community there for us. So for us here, it's just completely shifted our life. Like we're big on the drop-in. We don't like planning things. We love when people just drop into our house or dropping into someone else's house or just walking up the street and sharing produce or sharing stories. So for us, being quite geographically close to our family, to our village, was very important. Yeah, it's completely changed our lives having that, because it was the part that wasn't in the first book, and it was the part we were actually missing so desperately, but it wasn't, or I guess it didn't feel like a skill to us then to engage with the community, but we've realised it really is. It's a massive skill, and it takes a lot of effort to actually bring that into your life, but it's so rewarding to do so.
It is, isn't it? Because it feels like you have to be quite vulnerable and open that little heart of yours to everybody, where so many times these days we're closing off to people. But yeah. It also feels like it's totally against the grain of what the world's been doing, like over the, well, since the period of industrialization, it's the bright light syndrome. Everyone flocks to the cities for the jobs and the opportunities. And this is really going against that, is decentralizing, going out to the village once more and going back to that community core that's so enriching. But I think, as you said, socially enriching. But also, it just means you don't have to do everything. It means that you can actually lean on others, doesn't it? So if you don't have a great tomato crop, someone else might.
Yeah. Yeah, and for us, you know, that was always our thing. So we've never been in a position, although we could have, that we, say, grew all our own food. We always relied on friends who did other things better that we didn't do so well, or did other things that they preferred to do that we didn't want to do. And we traded that produce and we worked together as a village. So I guess the trade element that was in the first book was the seed of the village, where it was about absolutely relying on your community and on your village and the people around you, because it's so much more powerful and it's so much more resilient. Like you say, if something goes wrong, you've always got it back up there. Going over to Italy and reconnecting with my Italian heritage, Lentils Maltese heritage, and that Mediterranean way of life just solidified everything for us. There was really no going back after we'd sort of done that. So we're just really trying to embrace it now.
Well, when you look at these blue spots around the world of communities that have higher than normal life expectancy, the Mediterranean is one of them, isn't it?
It is. I think for us, it was the one that resonated with us most. This all started for me when I was traveling 10 years ago, when I was in my early 20s, and wasn't aware of things like blue zones back then. I was just aware of how happy people were in these very simple agricultural societies that I passed through. And that's kind of what set me off in this direction and what brought Lentil and I together and wanted us, sort of made us want to bring these things into our life, was just how happy it was when people had their community, had a relationship with nature. And we covered all the relationship with nature parts in the first book, but we absolutely didn't cover the importance of community. And now we've realized with that, going to the Mediterranean, feeling, actually going to these blue zones, going to these little villages and meeting these people and seeing their routines and the strength of their community. It was mind blowing for us, and it definitely solidified everything for us.
The higher rates of longevity in these blue zones are really quite simple. It's not rocket science, is it? What are the sort of everyday routines that you and Lentil observed when you were in these small villages?
Well, community was the umbrella above it all, I think. And, you know, you never saw these people alone. It was all about every day, not just some days. It was every day at a certain time or certain times even. They'd be all together. They'd be sitting, talking, sitting in silence, sitting and looking out at a mountain, doing something together in a communal space, cooking together, eating together, working in a field together. Everything, I mean, obviously the activities were simple, the food was real, the food was whole, very natural way of life, but it was this sense of community and this sense of calm that sort of permeated all of these places, and that really hit home for us, because you can absolutely bring those elements into your life wherever you go, and it's not about it being one particular place, it's about slowing down, it's about connecting to your community and feeling that support. And then we started researching into all of those figures and what that all meant, and really having that meaning, having that connection with people and having that support and security by having people around you. It just means so much to your mental health, so much to your chance at a long and happy life. And we really, I guess, never appreciated just quite how strongly that would all correlate. It's beautiful. It's just a very calm and very communal lifestyle rather than the sort of hectic individual lifestyle we often see here.
Yeah, and that real independence, you know, of the modern world where we have to be good at everything, where back in the village, you know, you really can just take on one role and do it really well and then lean on someone else for the other role. And I think that's what really the modern world hasn't really quite grasped yet, has it, Matt?
I get stressed when I have to think about all the things I feel I need to do in the world these days, whereas I know I can grow a mean vegetable crop or whatever fruit you desire or whatever flower you desire. And I love that. It really nurtures my soul to do that. Whereas there's people who are craftsmen, or we're renovating our house right now and doing some beautiful timber work. And that's what they do. And that blows my mind, because I it's not me. And I love to help and I love to learn, but I know it's not me. I know it's not that intrinsic part of me. Whereas for them, it's just so easy. It's just a supernatural thing. So I just feel like it's a revelation to rely on your community and specialise without specialising to a point where you lose any form of independence, but, you know, specialise in that thing that you really love and really become a master at that, and then and rely on your community around you to support you for the other things. It's a beautiful, I guess, symbiosis, really, in that kind of setting.
And I suppose you're not saying, look, let's all just move out of the city because it's fairly impractical. There's no jobs there. There are a lot of things that you can do to connect with your village within big cities, isn't there? You know, really you just need to read the book, reset your mind and really think, hang on a minute, how am I going to find my like-minded people and how can I build? Like I was thinking of the trampoline analogy where the I've got tiny kids and they're on the trampoline 24/7, but that trampoline is a woven fabric of lots of strands interwoven together, and it's a little bit like a village where everybody, every single person is a little woven piece, and then, you know, we all can support each other. Yeah. How can we do that in bigger cities?
Well, I think, and you know, it's a big part of this book is, the first book's a very farm-based book, and it was as relevant for people with a backyard or a balcony as it was for people with 6 acres, but at the same time, it came from the perspective of the farm. It was the lessons from the farm. So this book is absolutely flipping that and writing from the perspective of a village. The whole gardening section of the book, which is the first sort of third of the book, is all based on the village gardens that we've encountered overseas, all over the world, and the simple scale of those, the size of them. They're always a little thing. They're always abundant. They're always very crammed in, but they're super productive. And those little spaces, it's just recognizing that they can be as productive as any bigger space. It's just on a smaller scale. And I think it's the same for your community. I mean, it doesn't matter where you are. You don't even really need to be in a geographical or the geographical location of all of your community. I mean, we're certainly not. But it's about recognizing how important it is to nourish those relationships and to be able to rely on these people no matter where they are. I think it is important to have some geographically close people with you to feel that human connection, really, because the digital side of things tends to take away from that these days. But as long as you don't allow all of your relationships to be like that, I think, you know, some of them still can. As long as you've got some sort of face-to-face stuff going on, it doesn't matter where you are. Cities are full of people, of course. So you just got to reach out to those people and make a routine of that and nourish those relationships that you've got.
It's such a wonderful book. I really love it. It's come into my life at the perfect time. So thank you so much for writing it. It's just sometimes, you know, all of our heads are down and we're really busy in our busy modern lives. But sometimes a book comes across and it gives you that little impetus to press the reset button and just think, okay, I can do this better. I can really reach out. And I think a lot of times when you're a young mum or you've got a young family, the school is actually your community, the local school, because that's when you're seeing mums a lot or dads, you're reconnecting with teachers and stuff like that. So it's a really great first step. And of course, not only have you got all of the practical gardening information, you know, how to start a patch from scratch and all that sort of thing, wildflower gardens, you know, all that practical, you know-how, but as in the first book, you've just got the most fantastic selection of really unique recipes. I'm really blown away by the recipes in the book. They're quite unlike any other recipe I've really ever seen. A little hint to, obviously a big hint to the Mediterranean. Who develops these recipes and who writes them? Is it you or Lentil?
We both do. So I wouldn't be I couldn't formally count them, but I'd say it's pretty much half-half.
Oh, really?
It's for sure we don't. The most fun of writing a book, any book, I mean, writing the gardening stuff, I love, I thrive on it, and I write the gardening chapters in the books. But the food for us, those few months where we get to just sit and explore in the kitchen, is just a fantastic thing for us. This is heavily inspired by the Mediterranean, catching up with my family in the north of Italy, catching up with a bunch of friends we have down the south of Italy on Sardinia. Really interesting, unique Mediterranean food that we don't see over here. It's very one-dimensional, the kind of Italian Mediterranean food that you see here. And it's so diverse there. It's such a beautiful thing. And so we've really tried to explore those flavors, try and learn from the nonnels and nonnas while we're over there, and then come home and try and replicate those in recipes. So the kitchen stuff, testing in our kitchens, practicing things and eating is for sure the most creative and fun part of writing any book. And then bringing it all together. So it's absolutely half-half. This book's really about the stuff that we eat every day, every week.
Gosh, I wish you lived closer, Matt.
The stuff that our friends cook for us.
Really?
Yeah, the food's the most exciting part for us.
I think the food in the book, the food's the most unique part to this book, I think. I mean, I love a good recipe book, but the food here, it's just got this wonderful angle, this totally different dimension to the normal, you know, foodie books out there. It's family food, but it's really food from the season too. But just put together in the most unique way. And you're right, it's not your normal, typical Mediterranean food. It's really out there. It's so exciting.
It is, and yet it's so normal over there, and that's the most beautiful thing. And we are so fascinated and curious about food and flavours and how to use seasonal produce. Because when you cook with the seasons, you do have to be creative. We've never felt there's a lack. We just feel like explore those flavours, those seasonal flavours, what goes together with what, and really like get the most out of that experience. That's what this is all about. It's about taking those ingredients of every season. There's a lot of stuff in there that you can cook all year round, and then there's a lot of stuff that's specific to every part of the year. So you really get to sort of flow through the year with those staples, helped by really unique, interesting things that are really coming through and then passing you by and celebrating those while you have them. So we love the food. We wouldn't grow food if we didn't love eating food. I don't think you could possibly sustain that amount of energy otherwise. We love it. We'll keep exploring that forever.
Yeah, I think that's really classic Matt and Lentil aspect to this book. It's just dynamite. I made the eggplant and chickpea lasagna for the kids last weekend. Gobbled up, sent to school, absolutely delicious. Sent to school as hot lunch, they call it, in their little thermoses. But also I was quite intrigued with the aspect of the stale cake. Can you just tell me a little bit more about that? Because it sounds disgusting, looks amazing.
Well, it's one of those amazing things that before, I'd been to Italy to connect with my family 10 years ago. This is all mum's side of the family in the north of Italy. And got a sense of it, but it was a different time, different space. I certainly wasn't as aware or conscious of what I was doing or what I was seeing as last year when we went over there again. So in the lead up or the interim to all of that, I kept telling Lentil about how everything's stale in Italy. You have this perspective that everything's so fresh, but actually what you get served when you go and stay with your family is stale bread, yesterday's cheese, like the old salami, all the other stuff. It's like you're always, until you get to sort of lunchtime, you're just eating stale food. And there's always this like cake, this like corn-based kind of stale maize cake that tastes amazing, but I've never had it fresh. It's always just been a few days old and going a little bit stale. And it's the most amazing cake in the world. So we tried to replicate it, but actually what we ended up doing was almost creating a cake that never goes stale. And it's just this amazing fresh cake that stays fresh for 2 weeks in the fridge. It's just a beautiful thing.
Honestly, so it's...
We're trying to do something, but it turned into this other thing that was just incredible.
Even better. Stale cake. I love it. The stale cake. Mum, can we have stale cake? I'm going to make it this weekend because the kids' school have a fair and there's a cake competition. So how do you feel about me entering your stale cake that I make into the competition?
I feel great about that. Let us know how it goes.
I will. So it's obviously a completely different kind of ingredient cake. So it's using the whole grain corn flour.
Yeah.
And not refined wheat.
Yep.
So that would obviously give it a completely different texture. I do a really nice rosemary honey cake with a lemon frosting. All, you know, ingredients that I can get locally or, you know, in my own garden, especially at this time with the lemons and the rosemary so nice in the winter, spring. I love the idea of the honey and the lemon zest in this cake as well. So I'm going to give a little dose of rosemary in it and see how it goes.
That's great. I love it. We always want people to mix things up and make it their own.
Well, yours is doused with cream and huge, big, plump figs.
That was one of the best cakes I've ever eaten, that exact cake that's in those photos. It was perfect. And now it's just become, that's our birthday cake go-to.
That's what I read. Lentil said she loves it. That's what she wants for her birthday every year. Stale cake.
Absolute birthday wish.
Isn't it lovely, the thought, Matt, of that little tradition of Lentils going, rippling through and being repeated to people that you don't know?
Yeah, I think if everyone else integrates just any inkling of lentils excitement with food into their lives, they're going to be very, very much the better off for it.
I wish you all the best with the book. It's just an absolute inspiring read. It's completely unique and completely you guys. And it's just great to still continue getting a little Instagram update through my feed. And I just really feel like I feel quite close to you both, actually. So thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you very much. No problem at all.
What a wonderful guest. I'm so thrilled that Matt found the time today to have a chat to us about his new book, The Village. Such an inspiring read. Go and have a look for it. It's got a gorgeous photo of Matt and Lentil sharing a shared table of delicious Mediterranean treats with friends and family. If you love the podcast, if you could go to iTunes and give me a 5-star rating and a little bit of a blurb, I'd love you to. It really just helps connect other gardeners right around the world to my podcast, and it's a really great way of staying connected. If you've got a question for me, just head over to the Garden Clinic Facebook page or Instagram page and we can chat about anything there. Or if you've got a question about your plants or your garden, you can just pop them up there on the Garden Clinic website. Thanks for your company. Have a wonderful day gardening. Happy gardening and go safely.
The best garden in the street.
G'day, Graham Ross here. Now, you all know I love my gardening, and we all know that Sea Sol is simply fantastic for keeping your garden healthy and looking great. But did you know that Sea Sol reduces transplant shock and dramatically increases the plant's survival rate when they're newly planted? Now, look, it's like an insurance policy for your plants. So when you're planting out your seedlings and new plants in your garden, don't just water them in, Sea Sol your plants.
Don't forget the Sea Sol.